Good morning to you all, and welcome to the sixth lecture of the 2017 Palliative Care Lecture Series. Hospice New Zealand would like to thank and acknowledge the Genesis Oncology Trust for their generous support and funding to deliver these free lectures. The lecture today will be recorded, and it will be available on the Hospice New Zealand website. Please be aware there will be an opportunity for questions at the end of the presentation. I would now like to introduce our guest speakers today, Dr. Kate Grundy and Helen Sawyer. Kate Grundy is the Clinical Director of the Canterbury Integrated Palliative Care Services. She established the Christchurch Hospital Palliative Care Service in 1999 and has an ongoing leadership role at Nurse Maud Hospice. Kate was the chair of the Palliative Care Council from December 2008 to August 2014 and is now a member of the Palliative Care Advisory Panel with the Ministry of Health. She is the current chair of the South Island Palliative Care Workstream, part of the South Island Alliance. Helen Sawyer is a clinical nurse specialist in palliative care at the Southern DHB and was the Palliative Care Nurses New Zealand representative on the Palliative Care Council and is currently on the Palliative Care Advisory Panel with the Ministry of Health. Welcome, Kate and Helen. Please go ahead.
Good morning. It's Helen speaking and starting the first half of the presentation. Kate and I are sitting in Nurse Maud Hospice together in Christchurch, in case you were wondering how we were going to communicate vicariously through the airwaves. Look, we're just going to take you through a process, and our session with you this morning, we are framing up more as a conversation with you rather than you hearing something new, we hope. We hope this is just an understanding of how we got to where we got to now. Next slide. So it certainly has been a long and winding road, and we're not going to sing, you'll be thankful. However, that we have found the process very necessary, and from those not involved in the process, it must have seemed there'd been a lot of stops and starts, and we'll explain a little bit around that, but not too much. Next slide. So today we're just going to talk about the background, the Last Days of Life Working Group and the Governance Group, and how we got to the guidance and then subsequently the toolkit, that guiding vision and the aims behind the toolkit, and a quick tour of some of those contents, and then the next steps. And clearly there'll be ideas and aspirations from yourselves, and also challenges, and we'll engage in a conversation at that point. Next slide. So December 2013, as you can see there on the slide, we were on the Palliative Care Council at that time. We're commissioned by Don Mackey, the Chief Medical Officer from the Ministry, to develop a consensus on a national approach for the care of patients in their last days of life in New Zealand. And a Last Days of Life Working Group was established through an expressions of interest process. We have people who came onto that working group, and in the guidance you can see who those people are if you want to have a look at the names and places that they came from. But very purposefully that group was a mix of people who had worked very, very inherently with the Liverpool Care Pathway through the National Office, as well as those who had chosen to not use the Liverpool Care Pathway in their areas of work. And there was nursing and medical and primary settings, aged care and specialist palliative care representation on that group. And consumer, the consumer voice clearly. So we had our first meeting in May 2014 after the project was framed up, and off we went, and we had hours of fun reading. The working group was so on task, the amount of literature reviewed, and as you can see there, we looked at what happened in the UK, we looked at how that related to New Zealand models of care, what was similar, what was dissimilar, and then we did a stock take across the country of all services and got feedback on what people liked and didn't like about what models they were using, including and not including the LCP, and looked at all the literature and review of evidence and best practice. And very importantly, and what wasn't done internationally, was a survey of family and whānau, bereaved in their bereavement, during their, after bereavement, naturally. So certainly at this point, I'd like to acknowledge their feedback and their willingness to share their stories with our group, and so that we could inform the work that we were doing and make the recommendations very much based on what we were hearing, not just from that literature review and from providers, but also from family and whānau. Next slide. So I'm just going to share a little few bits from that survey, because I think this is what focused us as a group, really, when we read these very powerful stories, and there were good stories and there were very bad stories. So here's one from a hospital perspective, from a family. I did not know what palliative care meant at the time. A doctor told me, "We are offering palliative care now." I thought it was a different type of medicine they were offering to make my uncle well again. So it was a huge shock when he died. Next slide. And from a home setting, it was important for our mum to be surrounded by her whānau and mokopuna, but at the same time she didn't want to be a burden. She'd been in and out of hospital, but grieved to the sounds of her mokopuna playing in the background, which for her gave her a sense of belonging and normality, even though she was very unwell. Further, the whānau needed time to prepare for a pending death. This time with our mum sort of enabled that. She was able to have access to constant karakia, waiata, and laughter. Laughter is very healing for the spirit. Next slide. And from aged residential care, a story. When I saw him after he died, I was amazed by the peacefulness and how they had cared for him. Rest home, son. This was a huge help to me. I felt that he was my dad again. I did not expect this to be the case, and this will be my lasting impression. I am very grateful for this. Next slide. So the very, very common theme that came through, not just from our literary view and the information that we'd looked at, but from the families, was listen. Listen to the patient, and if the patient is unable to communicate, then listen to the family and carers of the patient. Next slide. So from all that work, and from all our thinking and talking, and we had the working group made recommendations and had regular meetings with the teleconferences with the governance group, really taking on board that theme of listening and working together with families and patients and with each other. The name Tāra Whakapere, meaning the path of unity, was chosen through a process, through our work with the council. And I think that there were some other options, but really, if you think about what we had heard and understood from the families, this was actually the most, you know, appropriate title. So in 2015, Tāra Whakapere was published, the guidance was published on the Ministry of Health website. Next slide. Again, coming back to what we've heard, what we'd read, what we'd researched, what we'd discussed, Tāra Whakapere focuses care on what matters most. That provision of person-centred and dignified care with clear and compassionate communication, attention to the cultural and spiritual needs, attention to detail on symptom management, supporting the family and whānau, and care after death. Next slide. And that's supported by the Te Whare Tapu Whā model of care. So we think about not just talking to the family, we don't about what they can see about physical needs, we assess everything we do as an assessment from the total holistic perspective. Next slide. So based on the work that we've done and the guidance that was out, and we really wanted to make a point that this is around, once somebody has been assessed as probably dying in the next hours to short days, that there are three components to care, three components to assessment that will occur, with every component based on Te Whare Tapu Whā. So that comprehensive baseline assessment that we do is really a line in the sand, a reframing, an understanding that the goals of care are shifting, that an understanding that the family and whānau understand that and have an opportunity to ask questions, have things clarified, communicate. And then once that initial, everybody's on the same page, working together, that path of unity, that we carry on then with our care planning, with ongoing assessment. And these are the things that Kate will talk to you about around what that looks like in practice. And after care, after death care, it's the same. Again, once somebody has died, thinking about the family, thinking about their emotional and spiritual needs and what we can do to support them. Next slide. So in the guidance, which some of you may have brought copies along to have in the rooms, and that we're not going to go through that page by page, you'll be thankful. every time we think about a component of our care planning, we have some guidance in there that talks about what we're doing from the perspective of the person, us as the healthcare team, the service we work for, and the wider system, the DHB. So just to kind of explain that very briefly, I'll just go through one of those just to give you an example. In our initial assessment, in our baseline assessment, we think about the family and whānau's awareness of the person's changing condition. So from that family perspective, what we're saying to you as a healthcare professional, we must ensure that those families have the time to discuss that changing condition and its implications in a way that they understand. So there we are. From them, that is what their minimum is, what they should expect, is to be able to understand and explain to us and ask questions at any time. So what we need to be doing, what our attributes need to be for that, for ensuring that the family has an awareness of the changing condition, that we have the skill or access to somebody who is appropriately skilled to have those conversations that include breaking bad news, and that we hold those conversations where necessary according to the family and whānau's wishes, and that we clearly document these conversations. So in the tools, in the suite of tools that Kate's going to talk about, this is all about how we not just communicate with our patients and families, but also how we communicate with each other so that the issues are understood and the care is planned around that. And so the other perspective then that we go on, the specific clinical service or the healthcare organisation, so if you're working in an aged care facility, you're working for a district nursing service in a general practice, in a hospital setting or in a hospice service, that your service has policies and guidelines to guide you in holding those conversations about death and dying, and that they provide you with an appropriate place to record those conversations, and then as required, the training and qualifications with communication skills, and they provide access to such training and provide support and clinical supervision for staff as required, recognising the impact that caring for people in the last days of life can have. And so the system, the DHB for example, recognises the challenges associated with those conversations and supports the health practitioners. So each part of the assessment and each part of the ongoing assessment in the guidance has that sort of language around each area. So we can fall back on, we didn't know we had to do that, but that's not an option. We do know that we have to do these things to ensure that this last days of life for this person and their family is care planned around the best possible outcome for them. Next slide. And I think that's fairly self-explanatory too. The seven overarching principles, as we've talked about, it goes back a little bit into what I said before about the guidance that we are not just thinking about the care being patient-centred, that our workforce is appropriately educated and supported, and that our communication, again, is clear and respectful, and we have integrated services which are sustainable, and those services are nationally driven. So this is that higher level work that is happening across the ministry and coming through slowly. You will have seen the, well, not all of you will have seen, but some of you will be aware of the action plan that's come out of the ministry following the review of palliative care in adult palliative care in New Zealand. And I guess, pleasingly, we had done this work prior to that, but we are all looking like we're getting on the same page. Next slide. I'll hand over to Kate here, and she'll pick up the rest of our little chat story.
Good morning, everyone. Kate Grundy here. So I'm going to talk about how we move from the principles and guidance document of Te Ara Whakapiri through to the development of the toolkit. One thing that Helen didn't mention was in the very early stages of the work around developing Te Ara Whakapiri, it was felt that a document, that the document would guide care, but not necessarily require us to have a fixed set of written a structure along the lines of what was the case with the LCP. And I think that people were feeling that we could just do this by providing a high-level guidance. And as we worked through the process, it was clear that, in fact, that wasn't actually going to be the case. We did need something that people could pick up and use to help them to actually fulfill the requirements of the principles and guidance. So we decided that we really needed to pull together to reconvene the working group. And under the guidance of the Ministry of Health, we pulled together some extra members as well. And they were really very involved in the tight work that was done around developing the toolkit. So we got some extra help, including representatives from Age Residential Care, from a rural hospital in the South Island, hospital physicians, an oncologist from Dunedin, and a general physician from Whakatane. We had a representation from a Māori health provider, even a healthcare assistant from Auckland, and ongoing consumer representation. We decided to separate into four subgroups, one working on the initial or that baseline assessment that Helen talked about, one looking at the symptom management guidelines and what was referred to in the LCP as the algorithms, but looking at developing some rewriting, just checking on those symptom flowcharts. We also had an idea from that we kind of saw being done elsewhere around an observation chart, which kind of fulfills that ongoing assessment role. And I'll talk a little bit more about that because I think that's something we're particularly proud of and excited about. And then also how we're going to document care after death. So we had a working group looking at that. Next slide. The aims of our toolkit were, as far as possible, to make it concise. We didn't want a really long and involved document, and we certainly didn't want something that was going to be quite onerous to complete. We wanted it to be readable in language that we were all comfortable with, of course knowing that the language that us in specialist palliative care is are familiar and comfortable with may not necessarily be the case across the whole health sector. So we're really keen to get some sense about actually how readable and usable the toolkit is in practice. But again, I'll come back to that as we talk about next steps. We wanted it to be very true to the New Zealand environment and true to the seven principles of Te Ara Whakapiri. We wanted it to be applicable across all healthcare settings, appropriate for the non-specialist workforce to both initiate and use, and very much focused on outcomes. Next slide. So I'm just going to go through the contents of the toolkit for those of you who haven't had a chance to look at it yet. And broadly, there are kind of two sets of documents. One set that we feel quite firmly that kind of needs to be fixed, needs to be not fiddled around with too much, apart from localizing. And I'll talk soon about how we expect and how we're already seeing these documents be localized so that they can be owned by the individual services. So the ones that we think really need to be pretty fixed are that baseline assessment and the care after death, which has actually been pulled together in one four-page document. Largely completed by nurses, almost certainly, but with a very clear role for doctors, and also an expectation that the wider healthcare team will be involved in the discussions and deliberations around completing that baseline assessment. Then there are two options for this ongoing care chart, or we've colloquially kind of called it the observation chart, which is two pages, and one is designed for healthcare settings, and one is designed for use in the home, with a different language, although the same issues covered. Then there are two one pages. One is recognizing the dying person flowchart to help people with that initial diagnosis of dying, and then some medical management general principles, which I won't go into at all today, but I really encourage people to have a look at that because I think it might be quite useful, particularly for the non-specialist settings. And then there are another set of documents which I think are very much going to be localizable and can be, the Word documents can be taken, either used as is, which is what we've chosen to do in Christchurch Hospital for some of them, but some of them may need to be changed. Staff signature sheet we've taken very much from the LCP, and I think it will have that sense of safety that we know who's been involved in the care of the patient. We've also developed a bereavement risk assessment tool called the BRAT, which I quite like referring to it as the BRAT. I think that the front page of that needs to stay the same, but the back of it absolutely needs to be localized to the services because it links in with the any pamphlets or information that's provided locally, and also it's determined by the bereavement services that are available in that locality. The discharge checklist has been designed for those people whom a baseline assessment identifies that they want to not die in a facility such as a hospital or a hospice, but want to be at home. So it's designed specifically to make sure that all the elements are remembered, a bit of a checklist to make sure that we've got all those things in place to facilitate discharge home. Then there is the symptom management guidelines, incorporating symptom flowcharts, and then two pamphlets, two-page pamphlets for Family Far Now, one around when death approaches that can be used in any setting, and then one around dying at home so people can be prepared for the things that they need to think about and organize. Next slide. So this is just a little screenshot of the Recognizing the Dying flowchart. It's the top third of the chart. And as you can see down the left, it says recognition of a person's deterioration. And it gives you some little tips about what changes may indicate that dying is starting to occur and changes that indicate that the person is closer to death. It's about getting everyone on the same page. And to be honest, I think this is often one of the biggest challenges that we face. This is the bottom part of that flowchart and takes you through the clinical decision, a little bit about communication, about management, which is starting the tail of a complete period plan of care and the baseline assessment and the ongoing care of the dying person chart, and then very much emphasizing the need for reassessment from the full multidisciplinary team. As you can see at the bottom, this is actually taken from the full toolkit, which is the whole toolkit together in one document, and that you can pull out each individual sheet page on its own. But at the bottom in the footer, we've put the words Tera Whakapiri and the name of the document, which is the Recognising the Dying Person flowchart. Next slide. This is slightly out of sync a little bit, but I'll just raise it now because I think it's really important as we start to look at some of the contents of the toolkit to think about how you might be able to localize it to your own organization. So these are some examples of what we've seen happen already around localizing some of these documents. So the staff signature sheet, in preparation for next week when we'll be rolling out in the Nurse Maud Hospice, Nurse Maud Hospice has been placed at the top of the staff signature sheet. That's just the bottom footer, which you can change as well, so you can make any changes to that footer that you need be, and that's an example of that. Nurse Maud Hospice, July 2017, at the bottom of the Care in the Last Days of Life sheet. And Southern District, so Helen's team have actually taken when death approaches and put it into their hospital-wide patient information format, which is available on the wards. And that's the kind of thing that we're doing as well in the Christchurch Hospital.
And I'll just highlight that in Southern, what we're doing currently around that localising is that we have in the hospital, what you've just said, if you go to the next slide, 21, you'll see Kate's got up there the Canterbury District Health Board. At the moment, because we have started to do some rolling out, we've got the Southern DHB logo just as the Canterbury one is there. However, we're working across the district because we've had some feedback from the hospice services and from aged care that they'd quite like to endorse that from a whole collaborative perspective. So we're working with some local printers, well, we're not, the hospice, one of our hospice colleagues is, working around how we can localise it to reflect that we are all literally on the same page and have all of our logos on it. So we're hoping that we can achieve that.
That's great. Thanks, Helen. So that's still on slide 21. This is the beginning of the baseline assessment documentation. I'm not going to go through this because this is if you haven't seen it, you're going to have to look through it in your own time. But it's completed together by nursing and medical staff, and it prompts the charting of anticipatory medications, review of resuscitation status, of fluids, of treatments, of interventions, cardiac devices. And it covers those four essential elements, physical health plus psychological, spiritual, and family health. Next slide. This is just a screenshot of the ongoing care of the dying person, the two-pager that I talked about earlier. And one of the things we're really proud of is our coding system that we've come up with, which is our ACE codes. And obviously, we don't really know how these are going to work until we actually start to use them, but everybody's really confident that they'll be able to help us get a sense of how well we're doing and what the issues are for the patient. Now, on this two-pager are the four elements, the four domains of care, and the physical health issues are reviewed 4-hourly. The other issues are reviewed per shift. So this is the form that's used in a healthcare facility. And in our organizations, it will be replacing the assessment or observation chart. Covers the four domains, and as I said, 4-hourly review of symptoms and others once per shift. And the codes are A, which is achieved, so that's the kind of, you'd be filling that in at a point in time which reflects what's going on right now and what's happened over the time period between now and the previous completed time. And A will mean that the symptom or the problem is absent or it's completely under control. C will be indicated that maybe you've had to get a new medication charted, but everything's under control. So C is a change in the status, but things are still okay. So it's that kind of orange. The red or E or escalate is that there is an issue here that needs to be sorted, and I as the health professional don't feel that we're on top of this yet. And we don't want lots of E's. We don't really want more than one E in a row. And it's going to be something that we're able to look back and audit, and I'm be interested to hear how people go with the utilization of these codes and how they're analyzed and reviewed. Next slide. This is the home care in the last days of life. So it's exactly the same chart, but it's written in language for use in the home, ideally to be completed by families if they wish to do so, supported by GPs, district nurses, and home care staff. So it's careful use of language and designed for the family. This is an example of one of the symptom flowcharts. There are five symptoms covered, same as in the LCP, so pain, agitation, nausea, excessive respiratory tract secretions, and dyspnea. And this is an example of the dyspnea or breathlessness management flowchart. I'm not going to go through it all. So finally, in April 2017, it was released onto the Ministry of Health website, and that's on slide 25. And on 26 is what it looks like if you go onto, and if you just Google Te Ara and then WH, you get there straight away. It comes right up. It's very, very easy to find on the website. And as you'll see on the right-hand side are the downloads, and you can get the full principles and guidance document, the full toolkit, both in Word document and in PDF, and then each of the elements of the toolkit are available individually. We're actually just making some final, because for some reason not all PDFs and Word documents were put up on the website. They're working on that at the moment, but you can download each individual component if you wish. Next slide, slide 27. So have we delivered? I mean, to be honest, only time is going to tell, and I think there are lots of very positive features. It's a very Kiwi document. It feels like a step forward whilst very much honouring what went before. I think it is succinct, and I think it's, as I've demonstrated, hopefully it's localisable, it's flexible, and it's very visual, which I think is a really good part to it as well. And I really like the language that's been used, very positive and supportive. Next slide. Just talking about the power of language, I have personally thought a lot about this, and I know that in the working group it was discussed quite a lot. And I don't know whether you've picked up from me and maybe from Helen if you've talked with us, but we're really very keen on using the language, using the phrase Te Ara Whakapiri, rather than last days of life or LDL. I would encourage you to think about what this phrase means to you and how you would explain its purpose and its value to the staff using it, so colleagues, to patients, to whānau. The problem with an acronym is that no one really knows. We kind of bandy it around and no one really knows what it means. I think that if we use the words Te Ara Whakapiri, it's contingent on us to make sure that we explain what it means in the language that can be understood by the people that we're talking to. And I think that it's a very holistic term and it's very respectful. And I would hope that we use that language going forward. So some little implementation tips, because we've been doing a lot of thinking about implementation and we've made some really big strides here in Canterbury, very much helped by Vicky Telford, who's our was our LCP facilitator here at Nurse Maud, and now very much working on implementing Te Ara Whakapiri. The implementation tips would be to use whichever components work for your setting and implement incrementally. We're starting with the baseline assessment and the ongoing care forms, the signature sheets. We're not implementing everything right away, although we do want to get the symptom management guidelines in use, particularly in aged residential care. And Vicky's started implementation in three facilities already. So inserting of the logo, using the patient whānau information as is or inserted into templates like I showed you. The BRAT can be modified according to local circumstances or used as a conversation starter about what bereavement services are available locally. And that's where we're at in Canterbury, particularly in the hospital. Full documentation is still required in the clinical record or your electronic medical record, whichever you use. And I think that's a point that's different and needs to be emphasized when you're thinking about comparing it to the LCP. Next slide. Our biggest challenge is implementation without any new resources. We were promised by the Ministry of Health right early on that if we could demonstrate a need to find additional resources within budgeting within the Ministry of Health, then that was up to us to put a case to the Ministry. And I think that that's still on my radar. Hospice New Zealand are partnering with the Ministry of Health and other leaders to promote integration and socialisation across the health sector, and that's already started. Dying happens everywhere, and quality care cannot be reliant on specialists being there all the time, so we need to find ways of using the opportunities that exist within our systems, and this is about everybody having a role, not just about those with palliative care on our name badges. What is the role of specialist palliative care? And I suspect you're all kind of thinking about that in your own areas. I think it's absolutely about getting the message out there. It's about talking to people at the top of organisations, because resources can and are shifted all the time within DHBs and wider than that to areas of need. Harness and support and nurture local champions. They really are everywhere, from your spiritual care workers to your quality facilitators, to your nurse educators. We're tapping into all of those people, and they're really wanting to see this work. And empower and support those champions to take the lead, with you there for guidance. It's not about us doing all the work, it's about using those local resources. We're actually exploring the use of releasing time to care in Christchurch Hospital, and they're really excited, and we've got a program already for how we can educate nurses through that program. If care at the end of life is done well, I believe that palliative care in general will be valued and supported within an organisation. So I think that's another lever that we need to utilise. Next slide, slide 32. So here's a kind of proposed to-do list. So we're still not there yet. We're still on this long and winding road that Helen talked about earlier. We do need to develop a standardised audit tool, and we need resources, maybe PowerPoint presentations on how to get started. I know that Michelle Main, who's our new program manager at the Ministry of Health, who I don't think is able to be with us today, is talking about developing a guide to use on how to complete documentation. I know that Hospice New Zealand are looking at including all of this within the fundamentals of palliative care, and I know that other people are thinking about e-learning modules and ways in which we can include Te Ara Whakapiri into those existing vehicles. And maybe a dedicated web area where tools can be housed, or where there are other resources that are used around the country can be shared, and there may be more. Slide 33, we want feedback. We want it to be used, to be shared, and we want you to tell us how it's going. We want to hear about any problems and potential improvements, but we also want to hear about your successes. If you're using it and it's working, tell us. This idea of shamelessly stealing or sharing other people's ideas is absolutely part of how we want this to work. If you're deciding to stay with an alternative program that you develop locally, keep an eye on what's happening with Te Ara Whakapiri, as ultimately our aim would be for consistency wherever that is possible. Okay, I think I've come to the end, and we would invite feedback. But before I do that, I just want to see whether Helen's got any thoughts as we've gone through our talk, just to raise before we open up for questions.
Just a very brief addition to a couple of things that Kate said. The home care, ongoing home care assessment or OBS chart, we did have some feedback from the aged care sector that they felt that that may also be, rather than the one that we're using in, as an organisation, may be useful for their aged care, for the aged care workforce, so that the communication between the carers and the registered nurses and GPs can be enabled in a more efficient way, because the language...
Well, I mean, home care, people would say that the aged care facilities are people's homes anyway, so that might actually fit quite beautifully,
And some of the other work that we're doing in the South Island, the general practice health pathways, we're ensuring, and there's a group in Southern working on this as well, and Kate will tell me that they're doing this in Canterbury around where the GP sits in terms of finding out about this, and, or even knowing it exists, so in the palliative care health pathways. So that's just a couple of other little implementation tips. But yes, we've got questions there on the screen, but we'd also like to hear now from you around what you are or have been doing, if there are any, if there's anything that you want to share in terms of your service. Thank you.
We're ready for questions.
All right, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal now by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 for any questions, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. And as a reminder, that is star 1 for questions, and we'll take our first question from Trish Fleming with Hospice West Auckland.
Good morning. Hello, I'm handing you over. Good morning. My name is Glenys, and I work in home care. My question is, if we were to put a questionnaire in somebody's home, how, in your experience, how has that felt with family? That type of questions and recording those answers?
I don't think we know yet, but you wouldn't just leave it in the home. It would be a follow-up following the baseline assessment where you've all got onto the same page, and you would introduce it and say, do you want to, would, you know, you'd show them the form and talk them through how they would use it. And it gives them a bit of a guide as to the kinds of things to look out for and the language maybe that they can use to communicate with people who are coming in and helping them with the care of their loved ones. So I think it's very much a matter of giving it a try. Now, clearly, it may be that it's in the home and only the district nurse or the carers complete it, or it's used in the home and the families absolutely take ownership of it and they use it. I think it will be different in different places for different families.
Sure, that's exactly what I thought, so thank you. Yeah.
And we'll take our next question from Catherine Robinson with Totara Hospice.
Hi, it's James Yap calling from Totara Hospice, South Auckland. Thanks for all the good work that you've done. It's great to see a much trimmed down version of the pathway compared to what the livable care pathway was. Just a question about electronic versions, if they are available or not. Previously with the LCP it was very restrictive in terms of what we could do, or, well, we couldn't do much with it. We couldn't turn it into an electronic version for our patient management systems. Are there any restrictions on Te Ara Whakapere?
I'm so glad you're there, James. And you're right on. You were bound to ask this question, so that's fantastic. We're really open to any suggestions about how this is done, and I think that that would definitely be on the radar. As far as the we've actually started thinking about the observation chart being that's really ideal for electronic. And in hospitals, as you all know, a lot of places, well, in CDHB we now have electronic observation charts called patient track. And there are, I think one of the North Island DHBs is also using patient track. And they're really keen in Christchurch, if this works, to actually develop a patient track version of the last days of life obs chart, so that when nurses stop doing the routine obs, they actually complete these obs. And I think that could revolutionize this program. I think it would be amazing if we could develop that. So we're really hoping that we can, A, demonstrate that it's useful, check the language, check the content, that it's the right length, that we're including the right kind of questions and things on it, and then absolutely look at see whether we can get something electronic. Helen might be making a comment.
And the other thing is, too, that my understanding, being from the the hospital world, but from some of the systems in hospices, for example, VIP and PAL care, that because the work is already framed up into whare tapu whā, that the actual transfer of the care plan could be reasonably seamless.
Sounds great. And thank you again, Canterbury, for leading the way again. Thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Ramlin Jensen with Tiananda Hospice.
Hi, it's Rebecca Shaw. Thank you. That was really awesome for all that work you've done. I actually just had the same question as James, really, because I think just sometimes it's that when you have to double write something, put it into childcare, sometimes it can be a bit of a barrier. So I think just like James is saying, I'd be really excited if we looked at a way we can integrate it into the systems we already have.
There's a job for you. James is, though.
James is, yeah. But, yeah, thank you very much.
No problem.
And we'll take our next question from Sarah Wilson with Dunedin Hospital.
Hi, it's actually Yvonne McFarlane, Registrar in Dunedin. It's a question that's probably a little bit more focused towards Helen, but relevant to rolling this out. Who or what groups have you had meetings with to let them know about the Te Ara Whakapere document? Like, not maybe not just in Southern, but where else in the country, and who have you all kind of spoken with as in groups of people in the hospital or within the community so far?
I think it's been Te Ara Whakapere by stealth so far. In Southern, and it's good to hear that you are a registrar in Dunedin Hospital asking the question. So in our team, we've begun doing in-services across the nursing in-service regime, working with the health officers. So we're kind of pitched so far, apart from the fact that it's been released globally on those emails that everybody pushes the delete button on. So we're working around that. We have a resource model, like a champion model across Southern, that works through the teams in the hospitals and aged care and hospice and community district nursing, where we meet, and we're having a meeting soon so we have people from each workplace. Now, we normally, that's very heavily nursing focused with some allied health, but we have been trying to encourage medical input into those resource groups as well. So that's just local, small system stuff. I don't know, Kate.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about is when you start to talk to people about this, champions kind of emerge, because what we would really like is people like you. You know, you've taken the time to come today, and what we know is that those people are around everywhere. When I've started doing work, we started just on Monday this week. We've implemented, or we've introduced it to our oncology ward and our bone marrow transplant unit, and we're picking up two wards next month. So we're just incrementally, and then we're going to pick up general medicine in the springtime. So by Christmas, we'll have a good proportion of the hospital up and running. We want it to take its own momentum forward. So really getting people infused and owning it, rather than telling them what to do, us telling them what to do, showing them it and seeing how it can take its own way forward. So I think part of it is about just getting it going and just kind of leaping into the unknown and doing plenty of talking about it. So it is contingent on specialist services about spreading their reach, talking about it, taking the opportunity to speak at clinical meetings or grand rounds. And I've hijacked the odd doctor's meeting and introduced it, and I'm doing a grand round in the hospital later this month. So just using these opportunities to talk about it. And I think that the relative simplicity of it, and the fact that we're not changing the way that people document the ordinary care that's provided, the day-to-day, the shift-by-shift care that's provided,
by using the clinical notes. I think that kind of helps, particularly in a hospital environment. And I suspect that for age residential care as well, that the simplicity of the documentation is also helping that process of implementation. I don't know if that answers your question, actually.
Yeah, it does. Just for Helen, I don't know if you have utilised the house officer teaching sessions that happen on a Thursday at 1 o'clock. So they're probably reasonably fully booked, but they're always a good place to try and get a bundle of house officers together, which is often a lot of the medics that we want to know about it, because they're the ones that are very much based on the ward and will mostly be the doctor, certainly, that's filling out the documentation in the hospital. We've just got one other question, if you can answer.
Yeah, sure.
Hi, I'm on Chris Hendry. I'm a clinical lecturer for the School of Nursing in Otago, and I also work casual shifts at urgent doctors, and I know that both of those jobs, are you going to start targeting the year three nursing students so that information is there before they even hit the hospital? So we've got some very good sessions today, up to 2 hours with the hospital people coming. The other part is from the GP point of view, and that's I work weekends at urgent docs, and we get a lot of people who've got sort of unmanageable symptoms who turn up, and we don't have a lot of information about them. So are you sort of targeting electronic form onto the med tech so that it's shared?
So Chris, what we've started doing in our electronic med chat, which in the hospital in the DHB system, is that we've got a palliative care folder in the reference viewer which links to those flowcharts algorithm.
Ah, good idea.
And so that they're right in front. And health pathways, again, for your GPs will, I hope, I'm presuming the working group will be looking at having that replicated through the health pathways, so that's on the screen in the office.
Yeah, we were certainly, we've got a potential kind of work program for the South Island Alliance to develop a South Island Tarawhakapiri health pathway that just it's a way of navigating. So you can just go kind of last days of life or Tarawhakapiri or dying or whatever, put that into health pathways, and it comes up with all the things that you need. So it's very much making that toolbox really accessible. And I think that will certainly help. I'm not sure about MedTech. I don't know enough about that to know how that would work. We'll have to look into that. I've got it on my list.
It could go into that One Health anyway, now that, you know, they've arranged One Health where you can go and see all of the information through the whole of the country.
Yeah.
So that would probably fit nicely there. And I'm working on the School of Nursing.
Brilliant. Thank you. That's fantastic.
And we'll take our next question from Karen Roberts with Hospice Waikato.
Hi, Kate and Helen. It's Wayne Naylor here. Was going to be one question, which James already asked. So that was just around integrating into our electronic health record. So it's good to know that there are already people thinking about that. And now that we don't have to worry about the licensing, like LCP had a problem with, and hopefully if we can get national, or at least for the people using PALCARE, agreement about using Te Arawhakapiri, then we could start progressing a project around that. I don't think it would be difficult. So the other question I have then is around the point of this new guidance and toolkit is that it integrates best practice principles and it should be applicable across all healthcare areas. We still have some reluctance from some staff to use a last days of life care plan in the hospice inpatient unit. I personally feel that it's a really good way to make sure we are doing everything and it's all evidence-based. I'm just wondering how you think the Arawhakapiri will change that perspective, because it's not like the LCP anymore, which was purposefully taking hospice practice outside of the hospice setting. So do you think that this will make a difference, and how should we respond to anyone who still feels reluctant to use it?
I don't know, but interestingly, from within Nurse Maud Hospice, they're quite excited about using it and think, now, I mean, excited and actually what it's like in real life using it are two different things, and not everybody, I suspect, feels that it's worth the bother in a sense. But I think it's got to speak for itself, and my sense is that we will have something very clear to audit, which I think will be really good. It'll be very visible what's, and what we know from the past when the LCP was introduced into hospice was that we realised that things weren't always remembered, that that kind of idea of it being, I mean, not necessarily a checklist, but kind of a prompt is actually really important for everybody, even people who do it all the time. So my sense would be to really try to get them on board, and not to, because also if we really are trying to lead by example and we want other places to use it, then we need to be using it too. So I think it's part of our obligation to improving the care throughout the health system that we work in, that we actually lead by example. We're not separate, we're not special, and I think that's really important to spread that word. Personally.
Thank you.
And that concludes today's question and answer session. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Dr. Grundy and Helen Sawyer for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone. Those were some really nice feedback there, and I'm sure that we'll hear more from people who want to communicate with us after the session, and we would welcome any communication now and obviously as people start to use the toolkit, and hopefully we will be communicating back to the sector soon. I know that Michelle Main is keen to keep you informed as to what's going on, so if anybody is keen to be absolutely included in feedback on a personal level, then either contact Helen or me or Michelle directly through the ministry. I think that would be great. But thank you all for your time and for listening.
And thank you in acknowledging the great work that everybody is doing and will continue to do. And just going right back to the point that was made to us from our whānau, just today, go out there and listen. Thank you.
Have a good day, everyone.
On behalf of Hospice New Zealand and the Registered Sites, we'd like to thank Dr. Grundy and Helen Sawyer for their time and generosity in presenting this morning. For those who still didn't have their questions answered today, we'll be in touch with you shortly.